the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Cryptoeconomy Podcast. Today, I'm excited to have two representatives from Threebox with us. So a big welcome to Danny and Michael. Thank you guys for being here.
Thanks for having us on.
So to get started, could you guys both maybe just quickly walk us through your background, how you came to be a part of Threebox, and what inspired you to create the company?
Sure. I can start. So we are two of the three founders of Threebox. My own path, I got interested in the decentralized space because of a long interest in questions around governance and identity. So I'd studied political philosophy and have always just been fascinated with how to coordinate people, whether that's teams or societies, kind of at every level and in every means. So did some work as a consultant on org design and technology right out of college, and then started getting into tech more deeply, ran some product teams and built things in the education world. But then in about 2016, fell down the blockchain rabbit hole and saw it really as the best coordination tool we've ever had as a society. And was simultaneously going deeper and deeper into questions around identity and what that means in a very different way, completely outside of the technology realm. But brought those two together and joined a company called Uport, which was part of Consensus, and the first company really working deeply on identity in the Ethereum and blockchain space and pursuing a bunch of different products and ideas around self-sovereign identity and user-centric data. And a few of us on Threebox that ultimately founded Threebox as we were working on various problems at Uport started to see that there were a whole bunch of problems to solve. And the one that we thought was the most important and primary to solve was really around the primitive of data and making it really easy for data, especially online, with web apps and products and services, to be organized around users and to give them control. And so that was the seeds of Threebox and how we created it, and kind of each of us brings a different perspective, so I can let Senna weigh on in his path to get there.
Hey, yeah, so thanks for having me on. A little bit about me. So yeah, like Danny mentioned, I'm one of the three co-founders of Threebox. And my path, yeah, was sort of a little winding, I think, like generally most in the space. I've been interested in a lot of related topics that I earlier in my career didn't think were all that related. So similar to Danny, I was a political economics major in college. Oh, I think mine says we're still going.
Yeah, I think we lost Danny. I don't know where he went.
Okay, yeah, so Danny's talking to me. I think he got cut off of you. Okay, well, I'll keep going. So yeah, I think like most in the space, an interesting background that sort of spanned a lot of different related, well, now related, but previously weren't really all that related topics. I majored in political economics and, you know, spent some time as a global macro trader at an investment bank right out of school, I guess, as you do as a political economics major. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2011. And so Bitcoin had first just hit $30. And I was, you know, the younger new person on the team. And they were like, hey, check out this like computer money, I think they called it. and so it was like at then where I really started to dive into the topics and like start to wrestle with really what this meant for finance and society more broadly. And so I was really like, I started looking into apps people were trying to build on Bitcoin, but obviously the language was quite restrictive to actually build meaningful things. You know, fast forward a little bit, I was then moved to, I was a product consultant, you know, helping bigger companies launch new products and services, a few related to you know, distributed ledger stuff, not really any like full featured blockchain apps. And then eventually found Ethereum and found my way to Consensus like Danny, where I was a co-founder of the Uport project that Danny just mentioned. And we were really trying to tackle all the problems that he discussed. But what we did learn is really about like how can we create more scalable, interoperable identity and data management systems, and sort of not lock users into any particular technology. So like not trapping their data behind a specific wallet, or like not being tied to any particular blockchain. And so kind of with these insights, we started Threebox and have been at it now for like 2 years.
So you guys worked pretty closely with Consensus, which is interesting because it seemed like that was sort of the first effort of its time to really bring developers together in a way that allowed them to, you know, create sort of a more sustainable model. So what was your experience working with them on this project? And as like new protocols came out, you know, was there ever any desire to switch to a different protocol, or was, you know, Ethereum and has Ethereum just been the ideal for you guys?
So Ethereum, and I think we can separate sort of the particular ledger technology or blockchain L1 from the community building around it. And so, you know, with Threebox, we have always saw a world in which like it may be true that Ethereum is, you know, wins due to network effects and composability and developer ecosystem, but it's more than likely that there will exist at least a few widely adopted layer one systems. And so, you know, when trying to create a data management platform, we really couldn't be tied to any specific chain, right? Because as a user, when I'm interacting with applications that are built on these, you know, back-end protocols, we couldn't be opinionated about, well, you can only use your data if this app is built on Ethereum or not. And so we've always saw a world in which there will exist a few chains. And so we've built for that. But I mean, with that said, if we're looking at the ecosystem today, you know, really judging by the developer adoption and the community around the systems, it seems like there is the most activity on Ethereum. And so, yeah, I mean, we're excited to continue supporting that community. But if any other systems emerge to show and demonstrate developer traction, then yeah, we'll just sort of add support for those networks to our system as we need to.
Yep. And I mean, it's been tried and true up to this point. I was in LA for a while, and there was this, you know, massive EOS bandwagon, and everyone seemed to be jumping ship, but just as quickly, you know, things start to go wrong. So it's good to be prudent in that respect. So when it comes to, you know, the high level overview of the idea of Web 3.0, I guess, what does that mean to you guys, and how do you see Threebox fitting in? Is that what the three in Threebox stands for?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. We think Web3 is really a collection of ideas that take us to kind of the next and much more user-centric web, much more interoperable web. And we see Threebox as super central to a big piece of that vision, which is the user centricity. And data and identity, and really control following users around instead of being locked and trapped into individual applications or platforms. And that's kind of the model we have today, which is each app needs to create their own network, create their own database of information in order to serve customers well, in order to monetize their customers, in order to create engagement within their app and platform. So that creates all kinds of weird incentives in the kind of Web 2 world of today, whether we're talking about the consumer side of things, where it's a battle of platforms and social networks, or on the enterprise side of things, where you have kind of the attract and then extract model of building enterprise software. And basically, the more that users invest in a platform, the more that can be turned around on them. And so part of the Web3 vision is instead of these silos around each application and each platform, you have a much more open and shared base layer. And a piece of that is the financial infrastructure, and so that's where a lot of work in the crypto world is happening. But a piece of that is also the social graph and the data between people and data about who you are and how you're interacting that informs so much of our online experiences. And so that's the piece that Threebox is really aimed at enabling. And we think trying to make that model really appealing to developers is what's going to usher us into that. And so our aim is really to make saving data about users with users as easy and appealing as possible to bring us to that piece of Web3.
No, that's super interesting. So when it comes to, you know, people comparing this to the established infrastructure, how would you compare yourself to like a Dropbox or a Google Drive or just general cloud infrastructure? And what are the pitfalls of the system as it exists today?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different, you know, cloud data providers, and they're all they're serving different markets. So Dropbox, Box, Google Drive, they're all serving enterprises with cloud storage solutions, but those are really for data within the enterprise. They have you know, different products and they do slightly different things. At one point, Dropbox actually had a slightly different product set that was aimed a little bit more at what we're doing, but they shut that down a while ago. The data that we're concerned about is not the data that an enterprise is using internally and not the kind of file storage that you might want to share with your colleagues or collaborate on. Rather, it's the world of data that companies have with their users. Anytime you're browsing or transacting online, anytime you're moving your mouse around, anytime you're entering information to a form or tweeting or at sending messages, that's all data that's being stored on a server somewhere. And so the cloud providers that deal with that are, for example, AWS or Google Cloud, kind of the cloud service providers on the back end, the dev infrastructure. And those have unleashed a lot of innovation, made it very easy to build kind of the Web2 startups by making it cheap. You don't need your own infrastructure. But the model that startups today build those with is each product and service has their own kind of instance or account with AWS. And so all that data is stored with them on their account and siloed behind that app or service rather than it being stored in a way that the user can bring it with them from app to app. And so it's really about inverting the model and making the data that's being generated online, the data between users and the apps and products and service they use, rather than being completely on the app product service side, more on the user side, more of a shared network of data that can serve all apps and products and services in a much more interoperable way.
So that's just one piece of what you guys have built. So could you go into a little more depth on the profiles and also the messaging component and how different partners might utilize those pieces of software?
Yeah, so what I just described is really the primitive. It's a way to store data with users, but there's a few types of data that are the most used kinds online. And so we've built products and even like drop-in plugins to make it really easy for developers to get started with these really common use cases. And so two of those are the ones you just mentioned. So perhaps the most common data when you first onboard into an application is your basic profile. And that might be today copied over from Facebook Connect, or you might enter it in each new account that you create, but it's your username if you're going to interact with other people, maybe your mailing address or some information about yourself. And any even somewhat social app, which just about everything is social now, has this profile. And it's crazy that we are either recreating it on each app we go to, even though it's roughly the same information, or relying on these huge platforms to provide it and suck back in all of the data. And so the first kind of product we had was profiles that lets you link basic profile information about yourself, your username, your profile photo, a little bit of info about yourself, verified Twitter and GitHub accounts, a spirit emoji, and have that to take with you across applications. And for the apps, that means they don't need to either use the hex addresses that we've seen way too much in crypto. So you can actually have a profile now, or if they wanted to have a profile before, they had to do a whole bunch of things on their own. Now they can just onboard a user super easily and have that profile information from the get-go. So that's profiles. And similarly, messaging is another kind of data that's pretty integral to creating a fully featured app. If you want users to talk to each other, either through chat or comments or private messages, That data, those messages have to live somewhere, and you need a way to build it in. And one of the reasons that, we thought that applications in the Web3 crypto ecosystem have been so lacking from a UX and kind of full feature perspective for so long is they had no good way to build some of these socially engaging features in. And so we built just a really easy way to store this messaging data of various kinds with the users and make it really easy for apps to add those social components into their products.
So on the messaging front, could you explain a little bit about how it might differ from like an end-to-end encryption type messaging like WeChat? Well, I don't know if it's really, but or like iMessage, what the bonuses are for the user, and also just from a privacy standpoint, what that means for them.
Yeah, so we do have different kinds of messaging, and some of them are encrypted and end-to-end encrypted. So first of all, everything in Threebox that's private is encrypted client-side. And so you can have that full privacy. There certainly are other messaging protocols that can be used. There's a few differences in what we're doing. The first is because it's tied to your 3ID, which is the identity construct within Threebox. You're keeping your message data in the same place as your other data. And so we don't have a separate protocol for messaging. We view messages as one type of feed of data that might happen between multiple users. And so it's just kind of a special case of the other data. And that makes it so by keeping it together with your other data and keeping it controlled by your 3ID, it means that like all of the other data in your Threebox, these messages can be brought with you outside of that one interface or platform because they're not tied again to that given app. They're tied to the group of users who are participating in that message thread. So that means you could have a chat box that instead of being on, say, Zerion, the chat box could be anchored to the Compound protocol and could be showing up in Zerion and Instadap, and the users could be on either interface but having the same conversation. And as they change interfaces, because products change over time and their preferences change over time, they keep that data with them. And so that's the reason that we've approached messaging in that way.
No, that's very interesting. So, I mean, there are a lot of people worried about like sort of big tech censorship and having their servers shut down. So, how have you approached things like moderation and essentially the integrity of allowing people to, put out, I guess, the types of content that they want to put out? And also, how do you make sure that they don't put out, child porn or something like that?
So on the moderation front, it's really an interesting question in Web3. And I think like a lot of the the Web2 like analogous tools such as Discuss or other sorts of drop-in systems actually build very robust infrastructure around content moderation. But we've sort of taken a bit of a different approach. So what we allow is we've actually built certain types of access controllers that are quite flexible for these content feeds or these messaging threads that allow the developer to sort of configure how they would want their own system to work. So at sort of the base level, sort of starting from the pure permissionless open viewpoint, like the base thread can be open and unmoderated, meaning anyone can write to that thread and post messages, and sort of anyone can read that thread. The sort of like little system that we put in place is that whoever created the thread, whether that's the application that initialized it, and that's usually the case on public commenting boards for like a news article or something, that the creator of the thread can in some ways moderate it. But you can always layer on additional levels of moderation and access control. And so it's really flexible where, there might be another type of system where the creator of the thread wants to add additional moderators. So, power users or people that they trust or other members of their team to moderate. And they can do that, or they can choose to leave it completely open. And it should probably be said that whoever posts a message in a thread, so the author of the post, can always remove their own post. And so with these sort of like base access control primitives, again, like
sure, no, and I think that's the right approach, is ultimately just leaving it to the people who are using it to decide the content. And I think they'll be happy with how that's set up. You seem to have put a lot of thought into it, which is good. So what are some of the explicit, applications that are using Threebox, and how are they doing that? So I know you have, dApps, wallets, browsers. How does Threebox interact with, companies like Nifty Football, for example, or some of the other partners you have on your website?
Yeah, so I'll give a couple of recent examples that highlight kind of some of the more common use cases. So the first one, MetaMask, is using Threebox as basically cloud backup and sync. So previously, probably a lot of listeners have MetaMask. Previously, all of the data in MetaMask, your token watch list, your preferences and settings, if you have contact lists, that was all being stored locally in your browser, which meant if you change browsers or lost your computer or reset things, all that data was gone. Obviously there's plenty of complexity around key management, but this is about kind of the data attached to just your account. And so what MetaMask is doing now is using Threebox to back up that data to a user's Threebox. You sign a message, give them permission. They either access your Threebox or create a new one if you didn't already have one. Again, tied to your Ethereum keys, so there's really no change in the user experience. And now you've got your data backed up, so you go to another browser, it's all syncing. We're working on a React Native client right now, and we have that. MetaMask will be able to add that to their mobile wallet too, and so now all of those preferences and settings and watch lists can sync between mobile and browser. And so they're using Spaces, the just like key value store for any app data. So that's kind of one of the kind of use cases we're seeing quite a bit, because there wasn't really a way to do that easily before in a decentralized way. For profiles, SaveLayer, the streaming money app, just added a very cool profile section to their product to make it super easy to send and request money and streams of money to and from users, to actual people that you know that have profiles. So it's simple, but it's so much easier than double checking you've got the hex address right. Instead now you just like click a drop down and look for the right profile. You see the picture and the data, so you know it's the right person. And so for any thing that involves multi-user transactions or interactions, you can just see quite quickly how much better it is to be using this profile that you see across different apps that you can trust to kind of verify you've got the right address. And then messaging. So there's some cool ones coming quite soon. I probably shouldn't spoil the partners' announcements by talking about them, but one that did come out in the last couple weeks is Foam Protocol. Basically built an entire like guides product for based on Foam maps, and it was actually the Relevant team that helped build this, but they're using message threads and comments to do basically a full system where on any given point of interest, users can leave a comment and a rating, have a discussion, and that becomes, A, just like a great rich discussion about any given point of interest, and starts to create a guide for a community in a completely decentralized way, but also becomes the basis for a reputation. As you leave reviews and ratings, you can start to be seen as a trusted person in either just a very soft way, but over time, as ratings add up, you can start to do more quantifiable and contextual reputations in a way that users can have control and portability with. So those
So
are
is it
three different
almost like
examples.
a Dissenter for like real life places? So Dissenter is just sort of like on websites. It allows for like open public forums that aren't, guided by the website? Is it sort of a similar idea?
Yeah, and so Foam at its base is a protocol for like mapping and trusted curation of various points of interest around the world, so that that the community curates. And so they needed a way to both drive engagement in that, and so these comments add richness and a lot of engagement to that process of adding details to the map, but also a way to give the community a way to like fight fraud and things like that. And so now you can actually comment on whether something's actually real or recent. So it's if you think about anything in the crypto realm that touches governance in any way, even the governance platforms will come to say that the vote is like the last 5% of governance. 95% of coordinating is in the discussion that leads up to it. And so anything that involves this curation like Foam does, you need to give the community a way to discuss amongst themselves and do these social components before it comes to the actual protocol and voting.
Gotcha. So where is this data actually being stored? Is it like a node that a user is generating themselves, or how does that process work? Did I lose you guys?
Oh, I thought Senna was going, but you might not be hearing him. So yeah, the data itself is stored on IPFS. And so the way the Rebox works is super high level. The architectures, we map keys, in most cases Ethereum keys, to a 3ID, which is a decentralized identifier. It's the spec from the W3C that ensures that everything we're doing is interoperable with others in the ecosystem who are also doing things around decentralized identity. So keys, one or multiple, can map to a 3ID. 3ID has its own keys, which encrypts data and puts them into distributed databases that live on top of IPFS. So ultimately, all of this data is going to IPFS. We are running nodes ourselves to ensure availability of that data, because right now IPFS doesn't really have guarantees around availability. So we're running those nodes for right now. Threebox is just doing that as we kind of support developers getting started. Pretty soon it's already possible. Pretty soon it'll be quite easy for others to run nodes as well. And so this will become a much more distributed network of nodes running to start with OrbitDB. That's the database layer on top of IPFS. We'll support other DBs long term. And so apps can choose, apps that are relying on this data for their experience can choose who they want to run the node that's ensuring the availability of their data. They could trust it to Threebox, they could choose to run their own node, or they could pay an infrastructure provider in the Threebox network who's going to run nodes like they do for other services today. So it'll evolve over time. Right now we're running the nodes, but pretty soon it'll be a network of great providers that are pinning this data and making it available.
So how difficult is it to spin up, your own node? What's the process? Is it something that you imagine most people or most developers are gonna end up going to those suppliers, or is it something you do imagine most people will want to do on their own?
Yeah, it's a great question. Right now, we have lots of people who want to know that they can, but very few who actually want to. It's a little bit tricky right now, but ask us again in a few weeks and it'll be much easier. We envision that if you're just getting started, you're a developer at a hackathon or you have a startup, that like you don't want to worry about that. If you're just building your product and onboarding your first users, you have enough to think about. That probably doesn't make any sense to be setting up your own infrastructure and watching it and managing it. And so it makes sense to trust us or one of these other great infra providers who are not going to be charging all that much to just run it for you. We'll have a free tier, so it's really easy to get started. Over time, the developers who have growing user bases and very specific requirements will have to make a decision, just like in today's world, how much they want control over their infrastructure versus how much they want to trust that to the experts. So we will make it quite easy to run nodes. I think there will be different versions of that, some for developers who want to customize it, some for infrastructure providers who will again add their own flavors on top of it and differentiate on various things. But all of them will kind of interoperate at the base layer.
So, So you mentioned hackathons, which is interesting. I know you guys have something on your website about going to ETH Denver 2020. I know you've done some like bug bounty programs. So I was just wondering how you've sort of approached crowdsourcing both the bug bounty type programs and also the hackathons and the building of, software on your system as sort of a platform play, how you incent those people to do so, if you've been successful in finding some great products that way, and just generally what your approach is.
Yeah, so there's a few pieces to this. I'd say, we've been extremely community focused from day one. As soon as we got started, we said the thing that we had above all else is stay open, stay super close to the people who are using us, make sure that we're not getting too far ahead of the ecosystem we're building for, what developers' current needs are right now. We obviously have our own internal roadmap and views, but what's going to make all of us successful is kind of building in lockstep and making sure that we're supporting each other. So we try to do basically everything on our team out in the open. If you drop into our Discord chat, which is chat.3box.io, you'll see our team having conversations about our day-to-day work in the public channels. And so that lets us just stay very open and connect to the community. And I think that translates to the actual code that gets contributed either to or on top of 3box. And so we have had a bunch of community members who have specific needs contribute to the development of 3box, whether that's finding bugs that let their apps work better and kind of give back to make sure that's true for others, whether we've had a couple people who are so eager to use 3box, they built on top of Flutter, and a few others heard that and were blown away. And so now they've got a couple, even though we're far away from like being able to support that natively on our team, people in the community are kind of extending the reach of 3box. People making sure it works in TypeScript. And so we've seen a lot of that. And then at hackathons, we've gotten to see just the creative uses for 3box that we didn't necessarily think about. And so we were out at ETH Denver. We had, I think, 13 of the, or maybe it was 9 of the 20 finalists of ETH Denver use 3box in their applications. And so I think that speaks a bit to just how easy it is to get started and also how much value it adds to any, again, user-facing app. But a couple of the use cases were things we'd never even considered. There was a team that was working with the tBTC bridge and had transaction records that were expiring as part of their product. And so they were able to use 3box as a very natural place to put those transaction records to make their product work. And that was not a use case that we had ever envisioned. And so for us, hackathons and working close with the community is a way to make sure that we really stay super close to the creative ways people want to use it and to what the biggest needs are to make sure that our development is focused on those.
Interesting. So, who would you say, are your biggest competitors in the space? If a developer wasn't going to build on you, are there any companies who are, taking a similar approach? And, if not, who would they use from, the old guard, I guess?
Yeah, it's a really good question. We don't really see anyone right now who we think of as a competitor. There are certainly others working on distributed data that share our vision of data being stored with users. But for the most part, those are partners of ours. And so OrbitDB has that vision, and they're like, we are built directly on top of OrbitDB, and Textile has that vision, and we'll work very closely with them. There's also folks doing stuff in the identity world, where we certainly have, if not a whole foot, part of one. But identity means 36 different things depending on the context. And so those who are solving issues around key management or proof of humanity or individuality or really strong wallets for credentials or credential issuing engines, all of those are things that play really nicely with what we're building at 3box. So really the competitor is saving data in a siloed way. And the ways that we see that happening in our ecosystem is either people defaulting to servers because that's what they used to do in Web 2. And we want to make it so easy to use 3box that they never think of using a server for user data again because it's so much better to not have to worry about that. Or hacking together, kind of before 3box got started, people would hack together their own homegrown solutions with IPFS and blockchain, and there's all kinds of problems with that. I'd say the last thing that we really want to, you know, see less of is people using keys as the identity and saving data and associating it just to a key pair. And the reason that's dangerous, while it might seem easy at first, is that silos the data in a different way. It silos the data on that individual key. And if the user loses that key or wants to use keys across multiple different blockchains or networks or just wants to use multiple different wallet types, now that data is not interoperable across those. And so the architecture we've got with distributed data and the 3ID and those tied to keys is what really unlocks the interoperable data that will make for good user experiences.
Have you noticed the majority of the demand for this type of software is in the US, or have you noticed that, abroad, like in the EU and Japan, where they have increasing privacy regulations, there are, developers looking for a solution like this? And, if so, how have you chosen to split your focus?
Yes, so far it's been a lot of US, quite a bit of Europe, some South America. We've had people, though, building on 3Box on every continent. We're still a very small team, so we haven't yet chosen to spend a ton of time on like internationalization or trips abroad. I think that when we really want to get much deeper in those, it will require a presence there to really understand the differences in those markets and the products that are taking off. But we're definitely seeing the beginnings of demand across the board. But I'd say the majority of our usage is in the US and Western Europe now.
Gotcha. So where do you see the company in, say 5 years? What is the ideal vision for the company at that point? And what are the sort of, I guess, benchmarks or goals you have to check off until that point to know that you guys are successful?
Yeah, great question. So the vision in 5 years that anyone who's starting a new product, app, or service that is going to deal with user data at all doesn't think twice before they save that they build their app in a way that saves their data with the users in this 3ID compatible way. And we think that there's going to be a lot of different ways that can look and a lot of different service providers and networks that tie together. And we'll be talking about some of that in the coming months and how we think that'll evolve. But the key thing really is it 5 years from now should be so much easier and more beneficial to avoid having to run your own data backend and secure it and tie it to the dozen of different APIs and make sure that you're compliant and all that. And so easy and fast and performant and beneficial to draw on this rich ecosystem of data that's around the users to save your data there, to pull data from users that might be useful to your app. That if you're building a new company, you wouldn't think twice about doing it any other way. I think it'll probably take longer than that before enterprises and existing companies kind of rip out their old infrastructure and move completely to this new model. But I think we'll start to see some of that, well before 5 years, because again, data for a lot of these companies is just a liability, and they spend so much time trying to secure it. And so, this model will be really attractive as it gets as performant as Web 2. I think to get there, there's more question marks about exactly what that path will look like. Right now, we're really focused on supporting people building distributed kind of Web 3 aligned applications, and there's quite a bit of room for this ecosystem to push their products faster and farther with better user experiences and start to bring in real users. So I think in the next year, that's probably the biggest focus is really push this ecosystem forward as fast as possible. After that, we see a bunch of different use cases and niches that might be more kind of in between Web 2, Web 3, where there's going to be a ton of appetite for this kind of model because it's so much simpler, because it's so much safer, and because it lets you make better promises to your users. And so I think in, the next 2 to 3 years, we'll start to see much more meaningful adoption and the start of Web3 products that, nobody knows has this distributed technology underneath them on the user side, but they just work way better, and they start to penetrate the kind of more mainstream applications far more regularly.
What are a few examples of those other Web3 applications that you might know about, just to give people an example of what, this Web3 might look like across the board.
Sure. So I can talk about one that's already starting. There's a new company that we're huge fans of that was out at ETH Denver and got a ton of love and excitement as they launched right before it, called Dapp Hero. And one of the things Dapp Hero does is basically let developers or even non-developers embed Web3 components, including three box profiles and data, directly into Webflow sites. And they'll work with other WYSIWYG editors or kind of no-code platforms over time too. But starting with Webflow, if you're building a Webflow site today, you kind of are just building a static marketing site. But with, and one of the reasons for that is if you had rich user accounts and data and all of these things, now you have to manage a backend. And for the types of folks using Squarespace or Wix or Webflow, that's not what they're looking to do, or that's not their skill set. And so when you have this model of data being safe with the users, and the users actually just bring their data with them to the experience, now you can build these super interactive, personalized, rich social experiences with just the front-end application, or even with a no-code application. And so people were able to build super impressive applications just in a hackathon, even without any coding experience, because this model allows that. So that's one of the places that we think it'll take off in the next few years.
Yeah, that's really neat. Our site's in Webflow, so I totally understand, the desire to make it a little more, user-centric, but also more engaging by giving them a little more feedback and making them feel like it's, more tailored to their experience. So I think that's a great entry point for that. So keeping on with this sort of idea of, over the next 5 years, and this is sort of a question to wrap up for both of you, if Michael is still here and can take it. If you had to choose, three tokens or crypto, I guess, slash blockchain companies who you had to invest in or hold the tokens, for the next 5 years, who would you bet on at this point?
I'm laughing because that's so
You
hard.
can just
Disclose
disclose
it's
it's
not
not
investment
investment
advice
advice
yeah,
too.
I'm not an investor. I'm not your investor. The standard statements. But I mean, I just generally, if I were to invest, I would look at the traction and sort of the network effects being built around these open source technologies. And so while I probably will be unable to give you particular companies or investment advice, just sort of speaking to traction and adoption, this is sort of why we built on IPFS itself, because of in the dWeb ecosystem, that's sort of blockchain related and adjacent and complementary. There's so much activity from so many different teams, all contributing to the same project. And so IPFS doesn't have a token, but Filecoin does. And I know that there's been a lot of progress happening in that area recently. I know that like we've seen, the testnet release, and there's been a lot of tooling built around it. And so to me, that's like a positive signal towards, there actually being utility in the network to sort of look to. I mean, so I might not be the best person to give investment advice, but generally, like, I think, if you're holding over the long term and not sort of trading ups and downs, I wouldn't be too swayed by, random swings in the market, and instead just move towards sort of investing and holding in great projects. That's sort of how I approach it.
Yeah, makes sense. And that's why we have this podcast, to help people find those. Danny, did you want to respond real quick?
Yeah, I mean, my philosophy and view is unsurprisingly going to be quite similar to Michael's. I should never be trusted to give investment advice of any kind, and so I won't. But I think our philosophy, I'm a huge believer in tokens. One of the things that hooked me on this ecosystem is the ability to spin up a network of people or resources towards a single mission or goal in a very clear way. I think that is incredibly powerful. I also think that one of the mistakes that everyone building products learns is you never really know what you're supposed to build until you're in it and have iterated a bunch of times. And so I think that we're still very early, and to speculate on which, you know, projects or products that don't yet kind of have a mature ecosystem or operating community out there might be great is dangerous. But the ones that have people building on them and people bought in, whether that's IPFS and Filecoin or Ethereum, those are the ones that I think kind of timed their token in alignment with when they were ready. And I think that's the right way to approach it.
Well, thank you guys both so much. I really appreciate it. To close off, if you guys could maybe just give your parting thoughts to our listeners and maybe give them an idea of how they can best help you guys succeed. So whatever your ask to them might be.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of work to be done. And so I think that the most valuable thing right now is just to engage in the projects that you're excited about, whether if you're a developer to contribute and build on them, if you're a user to tell the developers of the projects that you really like, what you're seeing out there that you're excited about that you think is going in the right direction. So we'd love to hear about which projects you think should have $3 in them. We'd love for you to tell your favorite projects to check out $3 and look at it. If you have questions, drop by chat.3box.io. Our team is always hanging out there, and we'd love to hear from folks who are interested, excited, or curious about what we're building.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys both so much, and thank you guys for listening. We'll be back soon with another episode. Bye, guys.